This song is called Syllogism. It's composed and performed by Mary Lou Williams. And it was filmmaker Carol Bash's first introduction to Williams, one of the greatest innovators in the history of jazz, who mentored many of its leading stars. But she remains unknown to many people. Bash began a quest to find out who this woman was and bring her story to a wider audience. The result is her film, Mary Lou Williams, The Lady Who Swings the Band. It will be shown on KNME Channel 5 this Friday, June 26th at 10 p.m.
How did you learn about Mary Lou Williams?
11 years ago, I walked into my in-laws and she was playing on the stereo. And I was just in awe of just what I was hearing. I loved the sound. It was groovy and funky. So I asked my father-in-law, I said, "Who is this playing?" And he said, "That's Mary Lou Williams. She's one of the greats." And I said, "Who?" And he's just like, "Yeah, she's one of the great jazz musicians." And I had never heard of her. And that just started a little curiosity thing in my head. Like, why is she being described to me as great and I've never heard of this woman? Basically, a book came out on her life a year later called Morning Glory, the biography of Mary Lou Williams by Linda Dahl. And I read it. It was an incredible book. And I just was captivated by her entire life story. And I said, you know what? I really just want to do a documentary on this woman.
What was it particularly about her music that really entranced you?
The song that I was listening to is called Syllogism, and it's on her Zoning CD. And this CD is, and you can download it on Amazon, Syllogism, was recorded back in, I think, 1975. But I heard this piece, you know, in 1999, 2000. So by that time, it was already 25, 30 years old. And yet it was so funky and hip, cool bass, you know, bass line. And she's a pianist. And I just thought it was just so cool. And I just thought it was contemporary, actually. And then when he said, "No, it's Mary Lou," and I looked at the CD cover and saw that it was, at that point, like 25, 30 years old, I was like, wow, this woman's sound is so contemporary, and she's obviously ahead of her time. And, you know, that, again, just made me think, well, who is this woman, and why don't I know of her? You know, this has started from there.
How did she learn to play?
Mary Lou was a self-taught pianist, you know, so that's genius for you, right? I mean, basically, she took to the piano very early on. Her mother was a pianist, and her mother was playing the piano for the church and would sometimes hold Mary Lou on her lap to keep her still as she was practicing. And Mary Lou, at 3 years old, played this melody that I guess was so astonishing that her mother actually dropped her and went and got the neighbors to come in and hear her. And so Mary Lou, at 3 years old, you know, just had that, she came out with that gift, and she loved the sound of the piano and took to it. And she says in her childhood that basically she would just practice for hours and hours and hours, and she just heard music inside of her head, and she would just only drink water and play the piano.
So even though her mom introduced her to it, you imply that her parents, or at least her mother, were a little freaked out by this innate talent and the fact that she said she saw spirits.
Right. The story of Mary Lou's birth is that Mary Lou was born with a veil over her head. That's the Southern vernacular for that. She had the placenta born over her head when she was born in the call, as they say. And the omen or the sign of that is that a child with that will have spiritual insights and visions and be able to see beyond, you know, the physical world. So that freaked out, you know, her parents, basically, or her mom, because she was a single mom. And Mary Lou actually believes that part of that gift it also imbues her genius and her ability to play music so well and to hear music inside of her.
She left home pretty young and hit the road circuit on, tell me what that was called, TOBA.
Right, so the name of the vaudeville circuit that she left home and played on is called the Theater Owners Booking Association, TOBA. But as you hear in the film, the black performers, because it was a black circuit, called it Tough on Black Asses. And so it's the Chitlin circuit. So they would go from black town to black town around the Midwest and put on these vaudeville performances. And she was the pianist in this troupe that she performed with. The thing about the vaudeville circuit, though, is that it's not a serious jazz circuit. This is vaudeville. It's rowdy. It's bawdy. It's entertainment. So she was actually started out her career as an entertainer. You know, it wasn't about being serious. It was about doing tricks with your hands and your feet or anything to sort of make an audience laugh. And that was how she got into show business.
But she eventually made her way to Kansas City with, which band was it?
The Andy Kirk Band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how unusual was that for a woman to be playing keyboards in a jazz band?
It was unusual. It was unusual. I mean, there were other women around. I think what was unusual about her was that the male musicians, because, you know, the male musicians at the time, and, you know, let's face it, even today, it's an issue with how men see women instrumentalists. But her gift was so apparent to the men that it couldn't be denied. And so she had that respect amongst the men in Kansas City who were sort of playing around. She would sit in on jam sessions and go in and play the piano and just do what she had to do to sort of get to hone her craft as a musician and built a reputation as being someone who could really cut the ivories, you know, around town. Count Basie tells a story that he would avoid the clubs that Mary Lou would play in. Because,
really?
Yes, that's one thing. It's not in the film, but he said, you know, whenever Mary Lou's playing, I just avoid this club because she's just cutting everybody.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because they finally get a recording gig in Chicago and with this producer, but they leave her behind in Kansas City. And when they get there, he's like, no, you need her. So she catches a train, but on the way, she's raped by the conductor. You don't spend a lot of time on it. She gets off the train. She goes to the studio and improvises, you know, Nightlife, a piece. So what do you take away from that about her? It's a pretty traumatic experience, but did it have a big impact on her life? Or how did she deal with that?
Good question. I think how she handled it is just how she handled it. She basically took that experience and somehow subverted it into her music, and it came out with this piece called Nightlife. I would say it would definitely would have an impact on her, but she never wrote about it except for one time, and that's what you hear in the film. She never went back in writing or in interviews about that experience. So the only thing I can glean from that is just what came out of that, and that is that she, you know, she was raped, and then she came out with this incredibly kind of upbeat, very complicated tune called Nightlife. I guess that really talks to how she's maybe able to compartmentalize or just sort of take a traumatic experience like being raped and turn it in her head into some kind of outward expression of in art.
This is Women's Focus. I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is an interview with filmmaker Carol Bash about her new documentary, Mary Lou Williams, The Lady Who Swings the Band. It will be shown on KNME Channel 5 this Friday, June 26th at 10 p.m. Bash just talked about Williams coming to Chicago to join her band by train from Kansas City. Along the way, she was raped by the conductor. She never talked much about it, but she improvised this song, Nightlife, after she arrived in Chicago.
She said, you have her saying in the film she was possessed by music.
Yeah, that's how she said it, actually. Yeah. That she would have to excise all this music that was in her head by writing it out or playing it, because, you know, she didn't know how to compose right off the bat. But it was as if she had to get it out of her and express what was going on internally through composing and arranging and just hearing different sounds and tones and compositions. So she would just be prolific in creating music.
She eventually went off on her own, and this is post-war, I think, but she was still kind of marginalized. She wouldn't sort of play sort of the sexualized musician, and she had darker skin. Can you talk about that?
You know, Mary Lou was always about the music, and so it wasn't about being a feminine entertainer, playing to the audience. And of course, you know, back, well, even today actually, but certainly back in the 40s, the lighter that you were as an African American, the more desirable you were to a general audience. And I would say that's still, unfortunately, true today. But back then it was even much more so. So the fact that she was a dark-skinned woman who wasn't being sexed up, you know, and playing to the men in the audience or to the crowd or what they expected of a female performer, she wasn't having any of that. And I think there was a cost to that because she did not get, you know, the Hollywood contracts that some of these other actresses and performers got. And I'm not speaking badly about them, but she made a choice and there are consequences to that.
She also probably didn't get the opportunities that a lot of male musicians of her stature would have gotten. And she composed an incredible amount of music, arranged an incredible amount of music, and she wrote a jazz suite that was performed in Carnegie Hall.
The thing about Mary Lou is that she kept changing with the time. So she wrote big band arrangements for the swing band orchestras, and we're not just talking about the Andy Kirk band, but she wrote for Louis Armstrong and Count Basie and Cab Calloway. All these incredible band leaders came to her for her arrangements. And then she moved on and started working with modern jazz and then the Beboppers. So she kept changing and also in the 40s composed the Zodiac Suite, which is a melding of classical and jazz, which today we call third stream. She did that back in the 40s. So, you know, clearly ahead of her time. And at that point, people were not really able to hear that. It was just a little too innovative, I think, to see a black woman on Carnegie Hall trying to meld jazz and classical music. It just didn't take at all.
Yeah, the reviews were not kind. Wait, that seemed to have a really deep impact on her. I mean, she had some dark times in the 50s until she converted to Catholicism.
Right. I think the challenge with Mary Lou was always just, you know, she was a true musician. She was a true artist. And it was just finding the audience for her that could really hear her on that level as the artist that she was. And I would say that to an extent that eluded her. And so during the 50s, she went to Europe to try to find an audience there. That didn't happen for her either. And she ended up leaving jazz. She ended up leaving jazz in the music scene for 7 years. And it wasn't until she basically had a thought, something led her into the Catholic Church, and she found peace within Catholicism, and that started her back on the road to composing again.
Yeah, she created a jazz mass, which is pretty cool to see.
Yeah, so she, you know, so Mary Lou is also credited with bringing jazz into the Catholic Church in the 70s, which is, again, a revolution. And I think at this point, you know, what she's done is that she has found this peace within herself, and she marries the love of jazz into her faith, and she writes, in the latter part of her life, she writes masses, she writes hymns, you know, she writes jazz-infused spiritual pieces.
What, you know, why don't we more people know about her? What do you think her legacy is?
Well, the legacy is her body of work. And what's incredible about her body of work is that it really does keep changing with the times. I think we don't know a lot about her, or she's not played enough, because in a way you can't pigeonhole her. You know, she's hard to program. It's sort of like Mary Lou of the 30s is not Mary Lou of the 70s. That's one thing. The other thing is that I think we still have an issue with dealing with female jazz instrumentalists. You know, the play that some of the men get is not the same as women artists. And for that reason, Mary Lou is more or less sort of a footnote in jazz, when she really should be elevated much more to the stature of being in the pantheon.
Do you hope that more people will learn about her through your film and play her music more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want everybody who has seen the film to go and download all of her music and really just study her music and just her contribution, because she is one of the inventors of jazz.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. Thanks, Megan.
Carol Bash is a filmmaker whose documentary, Mary Lou Williams, The Lady Who Swings the Band, will air this Friday, June 26th on KNME Channel 5 at 10 p.m. I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is Women's Focus. We'll go out on a selection from The Zodiac Suite, the piece Williams played at Carnegie Hall that melded jazz and classical music. This particular selection is Taurus.